The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts. Your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's June the 7th, 2024, and this is episode number 40. Thank you very much for joining us. Hey, Martin, that was awesome. On today's show, we'll be talking about the deep refresh of the Rivian R1 vehicles, Hyundai announcing the IONIQ 5 will be built in Georgia, Volvo EX90 production begins in South Carolina, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni. Joining us today is the peerless Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge.
If you're watching this on
YouTube, you'll notice that he's not actually here at the moment, but he will be here, like as Martin says. We have all the faith in the world, right, Martin?
No doubt.
And right. And of course, Kyle O'Connor joins us. Well, hopefully he will be joining us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Autospec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. So Kyle, if Kyle does join us, he's going to be joining us from a road trip in the Porsche Taycan, where he's traveling from Zuffenhausen, Germany to Istanbul, Turkey in a Porsche Taycan with some Porsche folks. And yeah, he'll tell us more about that. We're kind of curious what the infrastructure is like that. But and Jordan's with us all live. He's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, I believe, driving electric Polarises.
Wow.
Off-road vehicles.
That's cool.
So my throat is a little bit... I've been sick this week, so I'm a little bit raspy. That's not even a word.
Yeah. You got through the midweek show that we did, Battery Bargains, finding used EVs, new EVs, for not three, but four of our listeners this week. That midweek show available. You can watch it on playback, obviously, anytime.
Yes.
We try and do it live when we can, because we love the audience participation.
Yeah, it was great.
And engagement, I think they call it.
And if you watched last week's or this week's Battery Bargains, then you'll know that this T-shirt that I'm wearing.
Mm-hmm. Hang on. Let me go big. There you go. Do it again. Oh, look at that. We got merch, everybody. It feels official now.
Yeah. It's a lot of me on my big head and the screen.
Don't worry. I can do it again anyway. All the time if you want.
So yeah, we'll be setting up a store hopefully next week. I just wanted to maybe try another design. This is like just our main logo across the front on this lightweight T-shirt, but we'll try to get some maybe this slightly less a little more subtle design, maybe like the little microphone symbol up. I can't point.
Yeah,
where it is.
Yeah, just yeah,
our little
maybe
logo.
Not, maybe not even the words, maybe just the microphone. So like a secret,
yeah, maybe, yeah,
like a secret,
yeah,
handshake for those, yeah, in the treehouse that those not in the treehouse don't understand. So
keeping that would it be on cool. The DL.
So yeah, yeah. Or maybe some caps with just the microphone or something. Or the that would be very cool, actually. I hadn't thought about it. Just using that little icon. Just like a secret club.
Yeah. All right. So we want to talk about the Rivian R1 refresh. That's kind of like the big story, right? And Kyle and Tom both went to that, and so we're going to wait for them to come up. I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about. If you want to talk about any of that kind of stuff at all yet, Martin, or you want to move on?
I'm happy to wait for the guys who were actually there and saw it. And you finally got to the end of Kyle's two-hour-long video, which you said was exceptional and really well explained it and had people presenting the various new things of the refresh. Although my first question is, do I call it a refresh? Because I keep seeing that in kind of inverted commas. Like, maybe we shouldn't refresh. Do they not want us to call it a refresh?
I mean, they don't really say don't call it. I don't think they've told anybody not to call it a refresh. But and all their materials that they were presenting, they were second generation, I believe, was the term they used.
There you go, second generation. Okay.
But you know, usually I think with a second generation, it's just like. Is it usually a platform change, though? It's like the completely chassis has been reconfigured and things like, isn't it?
No. This is a pretty big update, so
we can go with that. And also, too, like it refreshes, a lot of times there's not a whole lot of mechanical stuff going on, but there's a lot of visual changes going on, just that, you know, people like novelty, human beings that we like novelty, so if you make the shape a little bit more different, it just introduces novelty, and we're maybe more drawn to that than the one we've been looking at for like the last 4 or 5 years. But this one doesn't have that. It looks kind of like the same, but there's a lot of big changes. But we can talk about that in a bit.
So I'm happy if you want to start giving the lowdown on the stats and what have you, and then maybe Tom, because it's only going to be slightly late, and then maybe Tom will be here. Or, well, it's totally up to you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do y'all think out there in the audience?
We can start on the Rivian stuff, but yeah, we aren't the two guys that were there. Maybe you can go to the next thing then if you want, and we can catch up when Tom arrives. But today's show will mostly be, I think, about the Rivians, because it's quite exciting news.
Right. Well, this other piece of news that I really kind of wanted to bring up is this, that the Hyundai has decided to build the IONIQ 5 at its plant in Savannah, Georgia. So I went there a year and a half ago or so to Savannah, and it was just, they had just a few, you know, vertical uprights. They were just building this huge plant. They call it the Meta Plant, M-E-T-A. And it's going to have huge capacity. It's a big deal. It's been in the works for a long, long time. And we just found out there's going to be the IONIQ 5 that they're going to make there. It's like an existing model, which is kind of took me by surprise. I didn't really expect that because, you know, they already make it. They're selling. It's been selling in the States for some time. So I thought maybe Hyundai IONIQ 7 or 9, whatever they're going to call the three-row version of the Kia EV9. I thought maybe they would make that there. But they're making the EV9 also in the U.S. So, yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was an interesting decision.
And we'll see more and more of this, won't we, as the Inflation Reduction Act and the various incentives start to filter through, and though you know that in those investment plans are 2, 3, 5, 8, 10 years, and so you know, although there may be a change of administration in November where you are, you would hope that investment in electric vehicles, you know, those budgets are long signed off, and although there might be some tweaking as we see Ford are doing and GM sort of scaling things up and down, that the overall investment plan stays the same. But one of those big ones is Hyundai Kia Genesis, completely committed to electric vehicles. Yeah. They're not wavering in the slightest. And then when you look at some of the monthly sales numbers overtaking Ford in terms of EV sales in the US earlier this year, only behind Tesla, and you start to think, actually, well, you know, maybe they've got something up their sleeve, and this is obviously one of those things they can access those. Because until now, they've been chipping in the $7,500 themselves that hits the bottom line, of course. So it's fantastic news.
So they sold 4,449 in the month of May. It's the biggest month ever for the IONIQ 5. And if you extrapolate that out to 12 months, if they had that level of production for 12 months, that would be just over 53,000 vehicles a year, which is not like for like a popular SUV model. It's not huge, you know, like 100,000 would be huge. 50,000 is like a pretty decent. But, you know, if they can reduce the price, you know, by building it here and people can take advantage of the $7,500 federal incentive, then I think that will really will help their sales to lease ratio, because right now they're leasing an outsized, you know, amount of these, and it'll also help them make a bit more profit, of course, if they domesticate the production of it. Good morning, Tom. Are you on? I think you might be.
I got to unmute. Hey guys, okay. How are you? Sorry, it's a few ticks late.
All right. We're going to talk about the Rivian in a second, but we thought we'd just skip down to talk about the IONIQ 5 being made in Georgia. I'm not sure if there's not any much more to really say about that situation. I don't know if you had any thoughts before we move back to Rivian.
No, not really. You know, it's good to get more domestic manufacturing here. You know, yeah. I heard you talking a little bit about sales, that they had a good month or a good quarter, which is
their best.
Yeah. So, yeah, and we're hearing that from, you know, other manufacturers too, like GM right. had the best month. I think Ford had the best quarter with Lightning sales. And, you know, amidst all this, oh, people are starting to back off EVs, you know, EV sales are waning. And then, you know, 2 months later, the best, we're setting right. records and everything. So, you know, I think the, you know, the news of the demise of the EV was a little premature.
for some reason, like a lot of the brands have done really good with EVs like this last month or so. But for some reason, in the U.S., at least, Volvo sales, their electrified sales are like way down. But they're up in like China and Europe. But just for some reason, like the Volvo numbers are like really weird. Anyway, and they're not selling the EX30 here yet, which I think will help turn things around a bit. But that thing is selling pretty good in Europe, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. Right. But, oh, I thought I saw. I'm not sure. You didn't speak to Kyle this morning, right?
Me, no. No. Okay. I was assuming that he was going to be here. I know he's traveling in Europe, but right. That was why. I couldn't make it on time. But I figured, oh, you'll let him kick in. And then when I quickly turned on, I saw you guys. Like, okay, I better get over there really quick. Dom and Martin need an extra hand over there. You know, yeah. It's like me and Kyle were at this big Rivian event, and it's like I know that's what we want to talk today. Not that you guys can't hold a show, but it's like the Rivian's the big news, and the two guys that were there are like MIA.
So, yeah, no, let's get into it.
All right. So we've long been under the impression that the Rivian R1 vehicles, the R1T pickup truck, and the R1S SUV were going to get a refresh. So the Rivian factory in Normal, Illinois, as we all know, was shut down for like most of the month of April to retool for these changes. So now the changes are here, and they're much more expensive than many of us expected. That many of us would mean, meaning me. The exterior styling stays largely the same. The bodywork is the same. The lighting sees like some subtle changes, but there are a ton of powertrain changes and software changes. And so the big numbers are $69,900, 420 miles of range, towing up to 11,000 pounds, 0 to 60 in under 2.5 seconds, and a 1,764-pound payload. Of course, not all at the same time or all with the same trim level. Okay, those are all the optimum numbers amongst the different trims and everything. Right, and the top range of the SUV is only 410 miles, not only, but it's 10 miles less than the top range of the R1T. And it's also a little tad slower, 0 to 60 at 2.6 seconds instead of under 2.5. That's if you get the quad motor. Overall, though, it's just like a much better vehicle, I think. And already it was like a pretty damn good vehicle. So Kyle and Tom, you and Kyle are both Rivian owners. So Kyle has an R1T and Tom, you have an R1S. So before we get really into this, I wanted to know if you decided to get the new one. I know what Kyle has said about this at the end of his video, but not everyone has watched the entire thing yet. It's 2 hours in length, right? But it's like a must watch. If you're into Rivian and curious about all the interesting details, you got to watch Kyle's video for sure. But yeah, what do you think, Tom?
Yeah, interesting. I haven't seen Kyle's video, and I haven't seen anyone's video or read anyone's article on it yet, even though it all came out yesterday. Wow. I just finished three consecutive trips, and I got home Friday, and it's like for a Thursday, so I'm just unpacking everything, and so I is as if I just left the press drive, you know. But so yeah, it really is surprising to me the amount of change that they made in a vehicle that's only 2 years old. And that's why they call it Gen 2. And I was just kind of like everybody else, like, this is a refresh. Look at it. It doesn't look that much different. Why would they call it Gen 2? And honestly, it's kind of in between a refresh and a next generation vehicle. But there's enough change that they made to call it next gen. I have no need to go out and get another vehicle. You know, we'll talk about it, you know, as we talk now. The one reason that I would even, the only reason, honestly, that I would consider it is the improved ride quality. and reduction of MVH, and it's massive. It's a massive difference in ride quality. Yeah, you guys know, and I've complained about this on the show many times, and I said the one thing that I don't love about my R1S is the ride quality.
Right.
And you know, I've said many times, my wife insists when we go on long drives to take the Lightning because it's smoother, it's quieter, it's just a better ride quality, you know, and you would think, you'd look at the two vehicles like this pickup truck and then a, you know, premium SUV, and you would think, oh wow, that must ride so soft and smooth. It doesn't. It's bumpy. Rivian made a little bit of a difference. They made some software updates that massaged the suspension a little bit in September, and that made it a little better. It took the edge off, but it's still, you know, if you were going to grade it, you know, it's still a D. You know, it might even be a D minus, the current R1S, you know, ride quality.
Okay.
And this new next generation platform, I think, solidly put it in a B. So it's that much better. And that would be the only reason that I would consider upgrading. Now, yes, there's a heat pump. There's improved electronics. The computer is 10 times more powerful. It can, this new computer that the Gen 2s have can process 250 trillion computations per second.
Wow. That's kind of crazy. Those are crazy numbers.
And the existing one can do 25 trillion. So it can process 10 times more computations per second. So they're really setting themselves up for next generation autonomy and computing power. So it's huge difference. And the heat pump, of course. I really wish my R1S had a heat pump. It doesn't. The new one has a heat pump system. So there's just so many changes that they made. The only thing that they didn't really overhaul was the looks.
So the R1S has a lot improved ride quality. According to Kyle's video, the R1T is not really changed too much. Is that how you feel as well?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And to be clear, I spent, you know, we had one day of driving. I spent the majority of my time in R1Ss because I'm an R1S owner now, and it was easier for me to really feel the difference. I owned an R1T for 8 months, but that was a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's only so much time. We had one day, there's 15 people, you know, getting different vehicles. I did have an R1T out on the truck, which Kyle didn't do. Kyle had to leave. He wasn't able to go to a Pacific Raceway and run some quarter miles and stuff, which was a blast. But I had that on the R1T and the R1S on the quarter mile track. But yeah, the difference in the ride quality, the R1T was always better than the R1S.
Right.
And I think the gap now closed.
Right. I remember the first time I got in the R1T, it was like, I felt that it was really firm, and I kind of liked it. But then, you know, after it got softened up again, I got to, you know, I drove it across the country, and it was, it was much nicer, actually.
So a real quick question here. Tom goes crazy. I mean, a comment of the F-150 considers a Cybertruck. Then Rivian comes out with a truck and leaves both in the dust, basically takes it down. Haha, makes sense. No, as I said, the improved ride quality of the R1S still doesn't meet my Lightning's ride quality.
Right. Okay.
It's the Lightning is still better.
Right?
Yeah, it does. It's soft, but it doesn't handle as well as the Rivian does, and it's not as capable off-road and everything. There's always compromises you make. Mm-hmm. I still if I had the new improved R1S, I would still take the Lightning on long drives, to be honest with you.
Right. So there's a bunch of changes to the vehicles, and I thought we'd just take them a few of them at a time here. So like maybe starting with the motors. I don't know if you can tell us what you can tell us about these new motors.
I didn't do deep dive with the motors. I mean, I know the motor configurations and stuff, and I have all the specs, Dom, but I didn't spend a lot of time talking about those.
Right.
So now, you know, all the motors are in-house. Before, we had the quad motor was Bosch motors in Gen 1. My two Rivians had the Bosch motors. But when Rivian came out with the dual motor setup, was it last year or a year and a half ago? They made their own motors in-house for the dual motor. So now the dual motors are still made in-house. The quad motors are made in-house now also, so they don't outsource for any of their motors. And now there's a new tri-motor configuration with one motor up front and two motors in the rear. So that's the new configuration. The new there's different power outputs for, I think, across the board.
Right.
The quad motor, which is their new, you know, top of the line, with all in-house motors that are oil cooled, so there's less thermal derating, has 1,025 horsepower and 1,198 pound feet of torque. So it's a beast.
Right.
And I did quarter mile in 10.8. And that was the first time I ever touched 10 seconds personally driving a vehicle on a quarter mile. Rivian says it's 10.5 is optimal, but you know, right, we were making runs after runs after runs. The vehicles can't, you know, and I think when I did that, it was at like 81% state of charge. So,
okay,
you know, pack voltage was down a little bit.
I'm not sure if you could feel the difference of that, you know, 0.3 seconds, hundreds of a second.
No, probably not. As a matter of fact, when I, the second run that I did, which was in an R1S, which the R1S is a little bit slower, felt faster. I thought I had beat the other run that I did, but I looked down and it was like 11.1, I think. So, and I was surprised because I was like, wow, I thought it hooked up a little more. And the biggest problem was, and we were using the track glue or whatever that's called, for better traction. I don't know if it was helping or hurting.
Oh, really?
Cars were hopping. And I'm no expert on track prep and whatever, but Rivian was doing everything they could to keep the tires warm and, you know, keep the surface right. And it was still launching with such force that the vehicle was in the beginning was doing a little bit of a dance, which, you know, I'm sure cost a little time.
Well, I think the motors really make up a huge part of the story here, because one of the big problems with Rivian vehicles was its tendency to overheat under like a lot of like towing, for instance, or like hard driving through the mountains or whatever like that. So the motors would derate relatively quickly, and that was one of Kyle's big complaints about it, because he's done towing across the country with that thing, with his R1T, right? So that makes
I talked to Rivian about that specifically, and they were like, 100%. It should almost never derate in this situation. Of course, find the right situation. Tow 11,000 pounds up Pike's Peak.
Yeah.
At 70 miles an hour. And, you know, but, they were confident that it wouldn't have a problem. But they also said, and look, even the existing R1 platform, that was not common to have derating. You know, it was, you can't look at things that Kyle does and some of the other influence and stuff and say, oh, this is what normal use is going to experience. We do specifically edge cases to see what's going to happen under the extreme. But they seem to indicate to me that, you know, and they monitor this stuff, pulling codes and stuff, that derating hasn't been a problem. But now it will be less of a problem.
Right.
Or at least they'll say it hasn't been a major problem. It's right. It happened, but not really. If you look at a percentage of times, it wasn't like, let's say, the Mustang Mach-E, where, you know, owners can get it to thermally derate pretty easily.
Right. So, and you were talking about the motors themselves. So we had they had made the single motor units like last year for the dual motor versions that they've been selling. So they use that, and that's oil cool as well. So they brought that oil cooling to their new in-house motors for the rear and the front. And those units are a little slightly different too. They were saying the rear motor unit puts out a little bit more. It's got a longer rotor in there. It's like a 185 to the, and it's 110 compared to 85 of the front motor.
Tom, can I ask you quickly your thoughts on the three different options? Because they could simplify it. They could either say, hey, we've got a dual motor. They won't do a single motor version. We've got a dual motor here that's good for most people. Or we've got the quad motor version here that is fire breathing, which you don't really need. But if you want over 1,000 horsepower, the 2.5 seconds, the 60 to 80 miles an hour in 1.5 seconds, like that, the torque out of the motors is just incredible. You know, that overtaking maneuver, 1.5 seconds, 60 to 80, it's just, it rips your face off. But they've gone for this all new tri-motor variant. Did they need to do that? Do you think it sort of over-eggs the pudding a bit? Could they just really simplify the lineup? Did they talk about why they've added this tri-motor setup in there?
Good question.
So in short, no, they didn't need to do that. I think if I were running things, I wouldn't have done that. And we didn't really do a deep dive into why, but I think it was to demonstrate. I mean, Rivian, kind of much like Lucid, is trying to prove that they are cutting edge tech company, that, you know, they're not just another startup, that they're the best at what they do. And, you know, I think the fact that the Cyber Beast is a tri-motor, you know, I think they're like, well, we could do that too. You know, the Tesla doesn't have anything on us, even though they had something already better, the quad motor. Right. You know, I'm sure that they ran the numbers and said, you know, I hopefully would imagine that they ran the numbers and said, you know, we can do this and it's not going to be too much of a investment to add this, and, you know, where it's going to end up, you know, costing us in the long run. I think it complicates things. Honestly, I think people don't like so many choices. And there's a lot of choices now with this lineup. I mean, we've got, you know, standard pack, you know, large pack, max pack, dual motor, tri-motor, quad motor. Now, they don't all have, you know, once you get up to quad, tri and quad, then you have to get the max pack.
Right.
But there's a lot of options. And I think people get, you know, a lot of times people don't want so many options. You guys know I owned a restaurant for years.
Right.
And over the years, I learned to make my menu smaller, because having such a big menu wasn't always the right choice. People, you know, don't want to have to make so many decisions. And the dual motor is powerful and fast enough that, you know, I don't know that we need the tri, but it must not have been a very expensive thing for Rivian to engineer that and add it and say, well, we'll put it in here, see what the take is, you know.
Yeah, 665 horsepower, 3.5 seconds, 4 seconds, 0 to 60 on that dual motor. It just seems like all the vehicle that people will need. But anyway, you mentioned batteries, Dom. I don't know if you want to touch on the batteries, Dom.
Touch on some batteries. So the batteries have been changed significantly as well, right? So I understand we have a LFP pack for the base dual standard trim, which is like 92.5 kilowatt hours that they say is good for 270 miles. Do you want? And the large pack is getting smaller. It's like 109.4 kilowatt hours now, good for 330 miles though. So and then the large pack, the max pack, is 141.5 kilowatt hours, which they say is 420 miles. Which those numbers have all gone up quite a bit, right? So
it's the same size pack, but the cells are more energy dense now. The individual cells, instead of 5 watt hours or 5.3 watt hours, I didn't get this answer. I didn't ask the right people. And, you know, as I said, you know, I hate to make excuses, but you're in there a short period of time. There's a million questions to ask. Whenever I get home from these press trips, I always go, oh, why didn't I ask this? I'm assuming that it's actually the same amount of cells in the pack that now that they're even more energy dense, the large pack could actually be bigger. Have more kilowatt hour, but I would imagine that it's software locked, that Rivian is specifically holding back some cells. I'm guessing this. I don't know. I'm going to follow up and ask them that, because I don't know why the large pack would have gotten smaller.
Right. But it's like 30 kilowatt hours difference now. It wasn't like 10 before, right? Or something like that.
Yeah. Well, me and Kyle joked about this, because, you know, Kyle was one of Rivian's biggest critics with this max pack, right, saying like, it's not worth it. It's, I forget how many kilowatt hour bigger was it at first. It wasn't much. It was like, you got 16 or 18 more kilowatt hour. I forget. What was it?
I think it was 10, but
I forget whatever it was. He was like, how do you spend all this money and get that much? So it's almost as if, well, they said, well, we can't make it bigger, so we'll make the other one smaller, so there's a bigger delta in between the two. You know, so I think that's what happened with this. But the question is it really still the same size pack, and they're just software locking out some of it, or do they, are they not, you know, are they not putting as many cells in, you know, to make it smaller? Because physically it's the same battery box.
Right.
You know, so I don't know why it has less capacity.
I have to assume they have fewer cells in the large pack now to make it like that small. But then the range, so that makes it lighter, actually, which is great for dynamics. But the range is still 330 miles in that large pack. So it feels like, so did they mention how much more efficient these new motors are? Is that what's going on
here? They threw a number, and I forget what the percentage was, Kyle, but I mean, Dom, but you know, it's not just... everything adds up to being more efficient. There's no one thing, as you can imagine. You know, the motors are more efficient. Has a heat pump now. They cut a lot of weight out with the whole new electrical architecture. They made small improvements in a million places. You know, and all that adds up to being able to. What was the previous range rating? I think it was 320 for the quad, mm-hmm. right? For the quad motor, I think it was 320, and now, but that was with the large pack. Well, I forget. You'd have to compare the dual motor, not the quad, because the quad's different now. Anyway, right. It's more efficient. It goes further, not tremendously farther though. Like if you look at the, I think. God, and I can't remember. I was talking to Ravine about this, about the efficiency. And, you know, if you were to compare the same vehicle with the improvements, and it was like 15 or 20 miles, something like that.
There's the whole lineup here across the screen.
There we go.
If that helps at all.
Yeah, it's to Martin's point, I think it gets confusing. I don't think it was necessary. I don't think they needed to have the try. I guess it was a way to get, because there's a big price difference between the dual and the quad max.
Right.
So I think it was a way to get people into a vehicle that want a little bit more oomph, I guess, and have a little bit more coin than what the dual max costs, but they can't afford the quad. I don't know.
So Tom, go ahead. I was just going to say there's no price on the quad. I was wondering if he knows what that is.
No.
Oh, okay, so the tri motor is $100,000 basically, mm-hmm. and then the quad motor doesn't have a price attached. So I'm 120, maybe it could be as much as that.
I don't know. They just said stay tuned to be determined. So
okay,
so Tom, can I ask? This is the question. As I was watching this being presented this week, and all the reviews come out, so new vehicles come out, and all the outlets. And the written media and the YouTube media will provided their reviews when the embargo lifted. As I was following that, the question I found interesting running through it is, how much do people really care about this second gen? Because they obviously had to present this vehicle to you and to us, the media. They obviously, but we always try and make this podcast of interest to the EV enthusiast, and often we talk about the industry and the business, and that's why this podcast wouldn't be suitable for someone with a light interest in electric vehicles. But it seems like so much of the improvements were under the skin, like they talk about the battery pack, the part count is down from 47 to 26 parts, the assembly is 37% better, the cost is 83, or the welds are down by 83%. Like, this sounds like a Sandy Munro video, right? Which interests a certain segment. His videos do very well, and people are interested in the technical side of electric vehicles. But how much of this update really does affect the end consumer, who just wants a great truck at the right price, a great vehicle at the right price, versus kind of the engineering, and how much it actually affects the company? Because there is a bigger picture here in that we want Rivian to survive and thrive and get through to the R2 and the R3. We want them to make it. I think we're waiting for Fisker's announcement any day now, unfortunately for those owners, that the party's over. And so we want Rivian to do well, but I kept coming back to, this seems like a very kind of internal update that was important to Rivian, but was it important to the end consumer? I didn't know the answer to that. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I would agree that the average consumer won't really recognize how much better this second generation is than the first generation. You know, and I kept going back to this, and I talked about it in the beginning. The biggest thing that people are going to notice is the ride quality. And that's why I really harp on it on my video that I do and the stuff that I'm going to put out. Because, you know, if you're, let's say, test driving Land Rover, a Mercedes SUV, and the real, let me try this new company over here, this Rivian. I absolutely know of people that said that, oh, I loved the Rivian, but you know, I took it for a drive and it was very harsh. And I think Rivian has solved that. So I think that's, even though they've made so many improvements on this, the biggest thing that the end consumer, I think, is going to notice on the average end consumer, you know, the non-EV, you know, enthusiast that, you know, knows about heat pump and, you know, wants to talk about, you know, the how powerful this new computer is. And but the average person is going to just drive it and say, wow, this drives really well. Whereas before, when they got into an R1S, they might have said, you know, this isn't premium SUV ride quality for me. I feel like I'm getting bounced around. So, right. You know, but I don't, I still think it's really smart on Rivian to invest and make these improvements while it might not translate to much better sales. You know, what it is showing to the industry and experts and maybe investors that this company is on the cutting edge of tech. They're constantly improving. They send out OTA updates all the time. They're, you know, they in 2 years, this vehicle's only been on the market for 2 years, and they've made an incredible amount of improvements on it that while you're correct, might not translate to the consumer, does translate to industry. And, you know, people look at this and, you know, maybe says, you know, maybe gives Rivian, like, I know they're losing money. I know they still have a long way to get on solid ground. They need to get R2 and R3 out there. But look at what this company is doing. And it might make people feel a little bit better about investing in them or so forth. So
now, my next question was, whilst Rivian wanted and are very excited about things like the, you know, the wiring improvements, a huge amount, something like, you know, 1.6 miles or 2.4, 2.6 kilometers of cable taken out of the vehicle. That's 20 kilograms, about 44 pounds of weight out of the vehicle, which is, you know, it's huge in terms of a vehicle getting better iteration to iteration. It's huge for Rivian in terms of assembling the thing. But I think ultimately what people will care about was actually with, you know, they've got these 10 ECUs down from 17 or something, but they're so much more powerful that these visualizations we've got on screen right now just look pretty. And so the average consumer will go, oh, but right. But now the UI actually just looks, I mean, this looks incredible. It all runs on.
Yeah, it looks so good. Unreal Engine.
Unreal Engine. Okay. Yeah. So then my next question, Tom, to anyone who raised this with the Rivian gang, do you, an existing owner, then get left out in the cold because they've made such a jump in terms of what the software can do, what it looks like, and will this only be coming to the new vehicles? Will the old owners, the existing owners, be supported? Did anybody ask that?
Yeah. So, of course, I did at every opportunity. I actually asked them, when will I get this new suspension through an OTA update? You know, I will be getting this cell shading. This is the Unreal Engine partnership that they made. They call this cell shading. Mm-hmm. It's like a 3D. You could actually take it and twist it, you know, on the screen. And it's a 3D view of it. So, I mean, if you were to pinch the screen now, you could move it up and down and get an overhead view of the vehicle and everything. You can move it around. I will be getting this in about a month. That's what Wasim told me. Yeah. Thanks. I mean, obviously I'm not getting a heat pump, a new suspension. They're not going to pull 1.6 miles of wires out of my vehicle, which they had all balled up in a bowl, in a big copper bowl at the event. And you know, you said 10 units, that it's actually, there were 17 ECUs and now there's 7, and they're all domain specific ECUs. So you don't have wires crisscrossing across the vehicle going to just specific ECUs that just control that one item. Let's say, you know, they've got bigger ones that control multiple things. So, and they had the whole layout for us, you know, showing how they did. There's one more camera. So there's 11 cameras now, and there's 5 radar. So it gives you a 360 degree view. For those watching on the screen right now that we're showing, my Rivian can't show the vehicles behind it, or even like those two vehicles on the side. I don't see that. I get the vehicles in front of me, and then I think it's like a 100 degree angle on the sides that I get them, but nothing level with my vehicle or behind. And now you get that. This new computer and the new 360 degree software can do that, which is necessary for, you know, in, you know, furthering self-driving efforts.
I think they call this whole suite of sensors and things the Rivian autonomy platform, basically. So they have like big autonomy ambitions, but I don't know how. So that was, I don't know if you want to finish your thought here, but after you finish your thought, just maybe tell us how you thought about the ADAS system, how it functions now.
So Kyle did a lot more on the ADAS than I did, okay, to be honest with you. I was going off, I drove off-road a lot more than him. Like I said, we had to pick our poison. We had one day, like 4 hours with the vehicle, and I didn't really use it that much. You know, I'm not a huge fan of my current system. It works okay. From what I got from the people at the drive, because I talked to the other journalists, they didn't seem to feel like it was that much improved.
Right.
Don't forget, you know, the Rivian's putting this out now. It has the new computer. That's only going to get better. That iteration after iteration, you know, they might not have, let's say, upgraded the software completely now to match what this computer can do. That's going to happen in iteration after iteration.
Yeah, basically, but that's kind of what Kyle was saying in his video too. The ADAS wasn't super great right now, but he does expect it will become much, much better in the future because they have all, you know, the full sensor suite, and it's all, you know, so kind of the platform is kind of ready to go.
They said it can see 3 times further than the existing system. 4K HDR cameras, much better with high contrast environments. I felt like so much of it were they've paid attention to the criticism around Tesla, observers noting this week that Elon Musk saying that soon it'll be 1 year between interventions. He's so confident in their system, but Rivian pointing out actually that our cameras far higher resolution, far better at those kind of high contrast environments when, you know, entering tunnels, leaving tunnels, and sort of low light conditions, fog, nighttime, things like that. So they obviously didn't mention Tesla. I guess not obviously. Some car companies would throw shade directly. I think Tesla probably would. But they didn't. Rivian always quite a classy outfit. But they certainly made the point, I think, that later this year when it fully rolls out, that it's the hardware suite is easily the best in North America on any electric vehicle, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, before we move on too fast, John Check asked a question a little while ago with a $5 super sticker or something. Oh,
John.
Asked, excuse me, Tom, what's up with the heat blankets on the tires of the Rivians?
So yeah, they had the heat blankets. So when we were in between runs and when we stopped for lunch, they had these heat blankets on the tires to keep the tires warm. So that once we started doing some more quarter mile and 0 to 60 runs, the tires were, you know, warm. You want nice warm tires. If you ever watched, you know, people on drag strips, they'll usually smoke the tires for a bit, you know, to heat them up because for better traction. So, you know, you can't do that. So they had these heat blankets on the tires. We've made 2 separate runs. First, we did 0 to 60 runs. Everybody had 1 or 2 chances with each vehicle. Not everybody got to do that because of time constraints. And then we broke for lunch, and then they put the blankets back on, and then we all did the quarter mile runs. So that was what those blankets were, to keep the tires nice and toasty so we got good traction.
How much did they go into the software side and the connectivity side? There's the new digital key stuff that I need to read up on fully, but also the Google Cast stuff as well. I know you use Google, but it'll work with iPhone as well. Access to over 3,000 apps and a much better connected experience. Was that part of the presentation they went into with you?
Not a whole lot. We talked about it, but you know, like I said, if this was a 2 or 3 day event, we might have had time to spend a lot of time on that. You know, they went over all the changes and all the updates, and then, you know, next day it's like, okay, we're out on the trails, there's not a lot of time. We didn't have time to touch on everything. I wish it was I wish I had another full day while I was there, but you don't always get that. So no, Martin, we really didn't discuss it that much. At least I didn't. I could have pulled one of their experts aside to talk about that, but I was asking about the other things. So I didn't spend a lot of time on that.
It seems exciting. I knew they were doing something with built on top of the Google experience, but not running Google. They do their own software stacks and things like that, but a much tighter integration into things like that. And I think that is, I'm waiting for that kind of full Google experience to come to more cars, because I use it in the Polestar and it just works. Brilliant. But that runs on Android Automotive, or is that what it's called? The full fat version.
I talked to Wasim about it a little bit. I don't remember if I talked to him just one-on-one or on camera. I do have a video with me and Wasim sitting in the vehicle going over the UI. So that's going to come out next week some point. And honestly, I don't remember if that was one of the things we talked while I was on camera or just something that he and I talked about on the side. So once I unpack the videos, you'll know if I have it on camera or not.
Max says it's all built on top of BlackBerry QNX, which is interesting. I didn't know that. I'll go and find out. It seems super interesting. So either way, it looks like it is much more seamless than it used to be. And he says Polestars is severely limited by the processor from 2015. I haven't noticed mine. I got the launch edition from 2020 as well. So I don't know if they updated it in the newer Polestars. But yeah, in terms of the NVIDIA stuff that's going inside the Rivians, I think one of the quotes they said was this will easily be the most, for people who buy this vehicle, easily the most powerful computer they've ever owned. And it's in your vehicle, which is
so much more important now to put those, powerful processors in vehicles now. It's like super important if you want to give consumers the experience they kind of begin to expect,
They had a comparison chart on computing power, the average new top of the line cell phone, the average desktop, the previous generation, with bar graphs. And it was just off the charts. It was a new, top of the line desktop computer, I think, can do 40 trillion computations per second. And this is a 250 trillion. So it's and that's a high end, desktop computer. So it's they set themselves up for the future, and that's what they told us. While we're not currently able to, use the system to its full capability, we will be able to, moving forward. So we're putting it in now.
If I can ask one more, Dom, if I got time.
Yeah.
Just a quick question to Tom, I guess, million. Well, there's stuff on the show to talk about. It's not Riven. $1 million question, or maybe that should be $11.6 billion question, because that's their current market cap. Their shares are around, stocks around $11, $12, down from where it was 112 or something. So, they, like many, have taken a kick in. And I'll come back to what I talked about, Tom, which was the bigger picture, the company, the survival, the thriving that we want Rivian to get to. And there is a lot of excitement around R2. And did they talk about how all of this news that we've just discussed relates to because whenever we do a Battery Bargains midweek episode, we often get an email saying, hey, I've got a reservation in for the R2, but what do I buy in the meantime? There just seems to be so much excitement. Did they link all of this to the future survival of the company and just getting better at making as an automaker?
Not really.
Interesting. I thought they might have put this in the bigger picture context of this is a direct lineage to the vehicle that's coming. But interesting. Not. It doesn't need to be.
The one thing that I will say, and I go on, I've probably been on 50 or 60 first drive events over the last 10 years. Companies never talk about what's not available to sell today.
Right.
They never. Don't want to talk about, what's coming next year, because they want you to buy this now. They don't want you to say, I'm going to wait for the R3, they talked about how their commitment to constantly improving their vehicles, You know, they're not going to put out a vehicle and then 3 years later, give it a new fascia and some new interior design and say, okay, that's our refresh. You know, like they're going to constantly improve their vehicles substantively, you know, so, and this was a huge improvement. So,
right. Well, can we,
that's interesting.
Maybe we should talk about something that didn't improve very much, actually. The thing that's, I don't know. So
charging, you must be talking about.
Meet my friends charging.
Right? So, yeah, this is kind of man, it's really where Rivian really, because they've got so much of this thing nailed down, right? Everything is like so good. Like, you look at the interior, the quality of the materials, of the design, it's so good. But the charging is not great, right? What's going on with
it's
that?
It's not great. It's passable. You know,
right, okay.
Kyle and I talked about this and we're like, it's just barely passable. It's like, you know, the 10 to 80 is like 40 minutes, something like that.
Right.
41 minutes. So it's just, you know, it's just short enough that you're not getting annoyed, I think, you know, most people at least. But it would be great to get that 10 to 80 done in 10 or 15 minutes quicker, you know. I can't really knock it too much, Dom, because I talk about how on all the road trips I go on, and my Lightning's almost identical. The 10 to 80 is like 42, 43 minutes. How when I go on my road trips, it doesn't bother me. It's like it doesn't seem to be an excessive amount of time. But I'm not in a rush. I'm not working, you know, and I need to stop three times along a trip to make that 800-mile trip, you know. But if you know, I would contest that if people need to do that frequently and time is of the essence, that maybe you shouldn't get an EV. You know, you should get a different vehicle if that's really the case. But you know, we talked about that. We talked about the LFP pack and, you know, wanting to get a charging curve mapped out on that. The fact that it's going to have a little bit of a lower peak charging rate, the LFP. I think it's going to be 200 and the other vehicles go a little bit higher. But it should hold that for longer. So it might actually be one of the might be the best DC fast charging Rivian. We don't know yet. You know, it's right. it has potential to be. You know, be interesting. I've already been very vocal about my request to get a long-term loaner with the dual motor LFP. And unfortunately, what I was getting back was we're not going to put those in the loaner fleet for
oh, really?
They're going to stick with the higher end trim, which automakers do that frequently. They don't put the lower trim options in for journalists to drive because the vast majority of journalists might, you know, complain about the range or you know, they're not thinking about the Kyles and the Mies and a few other people that really can articulate why you might want this vehicle as opposed to, you know, having the top of the line with the longest range. But in any event, one way or another, I'll get a hold of one, even if it means renting one or borrowing from a follower. When these are out on the road, I am definitely going to do a charge recording with the LFP pack. Another thing that I talk about with the charging, since we're talking about charging, Dom, was I was hammering them on not offering an 80 amp onboard charger option. You know, for me, I know we dwell a lot on DC fast charge, but most owners charge 90%+ of the time at home. And especially, you know, people that have premium electric vehicles like this that are $80,000, $90,000, or $100,000, those typically aren't people that live in apartments that, you know, have to street park and maybe rely more on public DC fast charging. These people, these vehicles are tucked nice and neatly in their garage from the elements and everything. So I was disappointed that it's not even currently on their roadmap, put it that way. There's no current plan to add a 80 amp onboard charger as an option. And Mark Norman posted 48 amp has been fine for me. And you're right, Mark. It is fine for most people. Mm-hmm. 100%. You know, it depends on how much you drive each day. You know, when I first started driving electric vehicles for years, I plugged my EV in every night, you know, and these were shorter range EVs. You had to plug them in every night. But honestly, now that I have long range EVs, I don't charge them every night. So sometimes there's been times where I'm like, you know, oh, let's take the Rivian somewhere and I'll hop out. And I'll be, oh, wait, I haven't charged it in a few days. Let me check. And I'll check and it's at 20% state of charge. And now that means I have to take the Lightning, because if they're both at a low state of charge, I could pull the Lightning in the garage, plug it into the 80 amp charger. In a couple hours, I've added, you know, over 100 miles of range. And you just don't get that with the 48 amp onboard charger. It's a nice option to have. It's not necessary, but a lot of things that we get on these premium expensive electric vehicles aren't necessary, but it makes the ownership experience better. And I think it should be an option.
I think looking at the part of the market that they're aiming for, you know, it looks like, you know, I'm looking at that interior, I'm thinking like, that's kind of like Range Rover territory. You know, you should have all those like little conveniences and touches, you know, it is just, so this is a pretty nice refresh. They got so much right. And they fixed so much, there's still some little issues. Like they fixed the phone charger. There's like, so it has a capacitor. What do you call a
phone charger? They didn't really fix it.
Right, exactly.
They said they fixed it, but I was using it and it still wasn't working right. So Rivian's, you know, wireless phone charging pad is garbage. I can't use mine. And the new one was supposed to be improved on. Mm-hmm. It wasn't working well either. So
they can't get that right. I just saw like an aftermarket something with it, and they had like a magnet, you know, kind of thing. So it kind of holds it in place while it charges. And the Rivian could have done something like that, but it's just like a slot, and this phone can still slide. It doesn't slide left to right so much now, but it can still slide forward and lose the charging contact and not work so well.
And mine, even without sliding, I had to like position it perfectly to get it to start charging. So it just, they're still, you know, for some reason they can't get that right. It doesn't work. I just keep mine plugged in.
Jordan's poking you.
I can't, Jordan. At the R3 launch, when they were showing it in New York City, I talked so much about the fact that that's why one of the reasons why I sold my R1T is because they basically lied to me. I ordered it and I never got it, and I could tell they were getting annoyed. I talked so much about it, so I didn't bring it up at all at this launch because you don't want to annoy the people you're trying to get information out of. But like, you know, I was like, yeah, you guys know I put it up against the Lightning. I was going to keep the one I wanted more. And that might have been the defining things, because if that had the camp kitchen, I might have kept it. You know, I would have definitely used that.
Yeah. Right.
Good shout, Dom, on the Range Rover, because of course we are getting a Range Rover full electric sooner rather than later. I think we get it this year, made here in the UK. And I think it's probably fair to say that the Rivian, we already know the Rivian's going to do some things better, you know, with an R1S than a Range Rover. I think, you know, the compute, the software power, the visualizations are going to be better. I don't think, you know, Jaguar Land Rover have the pockets deep enough to build, like they're building a battery gigafactory here in the Southwest. And they have their owner has enough money to do whatever they want, really, and get that business through to be a successful EV maker. Rivian, as bizarre as it sounds, is a scrappy upstart worth $12 billion, and a lot less than they were. But and they've got money in the bank to get through. But still, there's no doubt when the Range Rover arrives, it will do some things exceptionally that Range Rovers do. It will be very luxurious. It will be aimed at a certain type of buyer. But I don't think they're not going to go for 2.5 seconds on a quad motor version. They're going to go for Unreal Engine, stuff like that. But they'll certainly have to reach a standard of things like, you know, CarPlay and things like that and a certain, but which their buyers will expect. But I think we already know that. I think that the Rivian will out-tech the Range Rover. But you have to ask, you know, who's buying a 100,000 plus Range Rover or Rivian R1S? What is their priority? And partly that'll be the badge, partly because they've owned Range Rovers before, partly it'll be that comfort. And most Range Rovers never really go off-road anyway. So part of it will be just having that, you know, that brand of being going all electric. So Rivian, very smart to get out ahead of that, get into the market with this new technology and, you know, more importantly, all the improvements it makes for their company, you know, as well. So it'll be interesting to compare it to its competitors.
Yeah, I mean, well, Rivian's kind of like the American Range Rover now in a way, isn't it? Sort of. At least, well, not the new. So that when I think of Range Rover, and you know, I have two different images. Where I think of the historic image of Range Rover, you know, with like the big off-road kind of luxurious things. But like now Land I think Rover, of But now I think of I watch some British TV dramas or whatever, any cop dramas. They always have like the high-end Range Rovers, you know, HSEs chasing down, coming from the I don't know the British constabulary terms exactly, but you know they figure prominently, and it's more of like a, you know, an urban beast. It's not really for going off road so much as, you know, it's just, I don't look, looks intimidating. They're all blacked out always. Mm. And I don't know what I'm saying anymore, but.
Simon says that factory, Martin, gigafactory is Tesla marketing. Interestingly not, the word gigafactory existed before Mr. Musk used. Yes, gigafactory was a thing, but like many things that his critics would point out, in a kind of P.T. Barnum kind of way, he was able to grasp onto that, and I think it became known as a Tesla thing.
Right, definitely popularized the term as a...
He popularized, it's a kinder way. Dom always has the kindest turn of phrase. He popularized the phrase, he did.
I mean, it just feels like accurate. So
a bit like casting of things, that's been around a long time. He didn't invent that either, but anyway.
Giga casting? Or
he popularized
the phrase. Right. But actually, I do feel like they've really opened up, you know, the automotive, like just speaking of casting, like those large castings, like this is one of those things that, you know, Tesla started doing it, and all of a sudden Toyota's doing like not quite as a big a version of that, but you know, they're also talking about they're using actually his language, giga casting, talking about their version of it, and then other automakers as well have been doing, using it to reduce parts counts. But anything else about the Rivian that we wanted to mention? It's got an electric chromatic glass roof. Now, is that an option? Do you know?
So it's standard on, I believe it's standard on tri-motor and quad-motor.
Okay.
And an option on dual-motor.
That makes sense. That's pretty cool. So
I got to play with that. It was pretty cool. Worked really well.
Tell us about it.
I wish I had that. Yeah. So it's got the electrochromatic roof where the roof, the glass panel on the roof looks the same as my R1S and R1T did. You know, it already has a lot of UV protection. It filters out a tremendous amount of UV. But with one touch of a button on the screen, it then just blackens out. There's quite a few electric vehicles out there that has it. Porsche has it for the Taycan, a really good system there for the Cross Turismo. I don't know if it has it for the, it's not available, I don't think, on every version of the Taycan, or maybe it is by now, but I think at launch it wasn't. And it really works well. I mean, I have a nice video where I set my camera up and I'm like turning it on and off, and you could like see all the trees and the sky and the clouds. And then I press the button and it's just like black, and then you open it up again. And it's just like, you know, I mean, it's witchcraft if you ask me.
It doesn't become opaque though, right? You can still see, like, you can't see images through it, but you can still, it's still light comes in, right?
I would imagine some light, but not a lot.
Oh, really? Okay.
I didn't really drive with it. They didn't have it on many of the vehicles, so I never got a chance to drive with it. I was just, and before I left, I was like, wait a minute, I don't have any video of this. And they're like, well, I think that R1S over there has it. So I just set my camera up and was turning it on and off, and it's pretty black. When you turn it on, I mean, I'm sure some light is going to get through, but in the position I was in, you know, it looked like it filtered everything out.
Nice. Cheddar Kung Pao, who has the best YouTube name, says his iX has a nitrochromatic glass roof and he loves it, or they love it. So that's cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. There was the street, what do you call it, Street Turismo, what is it? No, it's not Street Turismo. It's Cross Turismo and Sport Turismo.
Sport Turismo and Cross
It came out in the Sport Turismo. But in the Porsche, it's in, like in sections.
Yeah.
So like it, but in the Rivian, it's like
the whole thing. Yeah.
The whole thing at one time, yeah. Sweet. Finally. So you also drove it off-road a bit. I don't know if you want to tell us a little bit about that. I watched Kyle's little version of that. And he said it was like so easy, you know, to drive sideways and stuff off-road.
You know, I've driven the Rivians off-road like that before, and I'm not, I'm not really into an extremely experienced off-road driver. It felt the same to me as the original quad. Okay. I can't, you know, Kyle said it reacts quicker. And, you know, the last time I drove a Rivian off-road was 2 years ago, like that type of extreme off-roading. So I can't remember exactly how it feels. Kyle still has his R1T. He regularly takes it off-road. So he would be much better to comment on how responsive it is in compare. And I actually made a video with Kyle, which I'm going to be putting up on my channel. It's just me and him, actually a Rivian rep was sitting in the back seat. And I'm like, let's hop in the car, you drive, and let's rip around this course a couple of times. And the whole video is just the camera on Kyle talking as he's going like, wee, you know, like, do you see the mud splashing up on the windshield and everything? So, you know, I'm going to have that up. Unfortunately, I didn't put a camera on the windshield to show outside. I just have a camera on Kyle. So it's just Kyle doing this and mud splattering up on the windshield. So, and the two of us talking while he's doing it. So I'll use like B-roll that we shot of the day of me driving and other people driving, you know, while we're driving. And I'll note, you know, this isn't this specific drive, but it's, you know, of us driving in the day. So we had some fun there. It's always fun when Kyle and I are on the same, wave of a drive, you know, we'll always hang out for a little bit.
Yeah, I really wish I could have gone with you all. That was looked fun. And I could see, watching Kyle's video, I could see a few people I know as well, like some of the other journalists. And well, I haven't seen them in a while, so it'd be kind of, man, it would have been nice to go. And that was neat that you're both at the Dirtfish track as well, because Kyle was just there like a week or two ago for the Ford Mustang Mach-E rally.
Yeah.
I think it's the same track that you were just there, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a good track for that. It's a Dirtfish driving school, like this off-road driving school place. So right. That was a lot of fun. But I wish Kyle could have come to Pacific Raceway with me, and we could have lined up against each other and had some fun and raced, you know. But I will say I was two for two. Both of my runs, I won. We didn't. It wasn't officially racing.
We did side by sides though.
We did side by sides, but you know the stress was, this isn't a race, guys.
Right.
You know, because what happened was the car was telling you what your time was. So let's say, you know, you launched half a second after me. Like, you know, the lights came down and when it was green, we went, but you had a bad launch. Your time still could be better than mine.
Right.
You know, but what I'm saying is, you know, I crossed the finish line first both times. So.
Yeah, they can say it's not a race, but you know how guys are competitive that, you know, it's a race.
Yeah, if you're on a quarter mile track and you're lining up against somebody and the lights are coming down the tree, how are you not calling that a race?
Right? Oh my God. Okay. So anything else we want to talk about, Rivian? Anybody out there have any more questions?
All new wheels and tires too.
Oh yes, true.
All new wheels and tires, like five different tires. The wheels for the Max Pack Quad are specifically designed summer Michelin like street tires. So, you know, if you are to get that version, you're going to want to get winter tires too, because this will not fare well in cold weather areas in the winter. They're summer street track tires, basically.
Right. Right.
So, but all new, a whole set of new tires, and the Max Pack Quad gets a you know, the Rivian, like, it's like a Sasquatch guy. That's like, the Yeti guy. Uh-huh. They get an emblem of him that goes on the back of the vehicle. So, which is pretty cool. I might order one like through the parts store eventually or something, and put it on the back of mine just for fun.
Right. Kyle was, you know, in Kyle's video, he mentions that people are going to do that. You know, you can use it to identify like the quad motor ones. I think it comes on the back of the quad motor.
Yeah.
But he says you can't count on that, because people are going to just put that on there, going to buy one and put it on there because it looks cool.
Well, I have a quad. I'll put it on mine.
Yeah.
I'm not cheap.
There you go. That's right. what did I see that? Oh, Sharon B asks, can Kyle actually drive as well as he thinks he can? Sometimes
he's not
slow.
Yeah.
No, he actually is pretty good. He's going to be doing some racing later this year with and it's the same series with Drew, and we were talking about it, and he says Drew is definitely faster than he is, but he's going to try to, you know, pick up the, you know, get some time in between then and now, or now and then.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he is.
He's a good driver.
Kyle's a good driver. He really is. You know, yeah. when you go on these trips, and I mean, he's an enthusiast, but he's had the opportunity to practice a lot. Don't forget, Kyle used to like lease a track in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he could just hop out on a track and drive all these cars that he would get on loans and even his own cars. So if you have the accessibility to that, it's all about practice. You know, I mean, even when I do these press drives, the first lap or two I do, whenever like I'm in a Porsche or something and they let us come to the track, I admit my first run or two is not good. And mm-hmm. and it because maybe it was 8 months since I've been on a track. But then if you have the opportunity to do 7, 8, 9, 10 laps, you start to get good at it. Kyle just keeps going. He's always on a track, whether it's an on-road track or an off-road track. So yeah, Kyle's a good driver.
Yeah. All right. Right. So was there anything else? I think that's probably we should probably put roofing the bed.
Yeah. Okay. Last thing before we go, there's also two new interior options for the Max for the Max Pack. Yeah, which are really nice. The floor mats are like a plaid layout, and really nice looking. Like I might order the floor mats and put them in my even though the color wouldn't be a perfect match, they look that good. So yeah. So I mean, this is, you know, we talk about a refresh versus a next gen. They did a lot of improvements in the vehicle. And the light bar, the LED light bar in the front, for it shows your charge percentage. There's 10 increments. And it also, Rivian puts out like software updates on the holiday and stuff like temporary, like Tesla does, that does, like they had a Halloween one last year. They said, we're going to do real fun things with that light bar, dancing light bar. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one thing. I'm sure we missed some of the improvements that they made. That's how many improvements they made.
And the light bar can do different colors now too, at least that new segment of it, right? The segmented part, right? And the segmented part is also on the rear. So if you're like if you put on your hazard lights and you're stuck in the middle of a lane, you can have them like
go certain like way,
this way.
Yeah.
Pointing people point around you which way to go around you or whatever. Yeah. So that's kind of that's nice. A little touch.
I had one more, Dom. I had one more. Tom, you missed on our midweek, because obviously you were working at the this event. Dom and I did a midweek show, and somebody asked on Battery Bargains for some car buying advice. And they're like, what do you think? I can get a stellar deal right now on a 2023 Rivian, either whether it's existing stock, they're offloading or whatever. Or should I wait and get the new refreshed one that's going to be a lot more, you know, expensive? I don't know what lease deal he was looking at, but could get a killer deal. Do you think it's a night and day difference? Would you say to somebody, look, if you can get an amazing deal, the existing, well, the one pre-refresh is still very compelling, or do you think it's enough to say, spend the extra, you'll thank yourself?
So that's really going to depend on how much that extra is hurting your budget. You know, if you're very well position financially, it might be worth getting the new one. But from what I understand, so they had some really deep discounts and awesome lease deals to clear out the inventory. Rivian did not want to have first gen vehicles and second gen vehicles available at the same time, or at least very little overlap. That's never good when that happens. So if it depends on how important the ride quality is for you. Because as I said, to me, that is the biggest tangible feeling difference is the ride quality. I would probably, you know, if it was, you know, $15,000, $20,000 difference, I would get the Gen 1.
Right. Nicholas is asking the same question. We asked, we started the segment with, are you getting the new one? I believe you said probably not.
Yeah, no, I'm not getting a new one. To me, the ride quality is the biggest thing. And can you imagine what the hit I would take on that? You know, with it'd probably be like a $30,000 loss to have improved ride quality. You know, of course, I'd get all the other little things, but
that's a lot of money.
I'll be keeping mine. I only have like 8,000 miles on it. It's still like a brand new vehicle, so I'll be holding on to it.
Right, It'd be interesting to see how the market reacts to like the second the used market, the secondhand market.
Yeah, it could push it down. It could push
down. I'm wondering if, because it was just above, what was it, closer, 50, up in the 50, high 50s and 60s, you know, they get a used. Yeah. So it'd be kind of nice to see that come down a little bit.
Into the 40s?
Yeah. Ooh, when I got mine, the MSRP was like 96,000.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I can't imagine what the beating I would take, you know, on the on a trade in. No.
But yours was celebrity owned, so you know.
Yeah.
All right.
Sign the dashboard.
Yeah. Exactly.
We have a couple of news items we can talk about, but Tom, you also put a video out yesterday that advises people which of the three different NACs to CCS adapters that you've tested. Which one of the people should get now? So what's your final conclusion on that?
So, you know, as I often do, I leave the decision up to the person. I try to present all the facts, offer my opinion on usability. I talked a lot about the Electron problems with the recall and the fact that even some of the new Electron adapters that they're sending out after the recall, customers are having the opposite problem with. Now, instead of it pulling apart too easily, they can't get the NACS adapter out of the inlet. So, you know, I talk a lot about that. I don't think that's going to be a long-term issue, to be honest with you. There's some tolerance issues that Electron is just working out. The A to Z had some early tolerance issues too. This happens with manufacturing. Don't forget, all of the NACS connectors aren't always the same size. Some of them out in the public have been beaten up and dinged, and some of the plastic could take a half of a millimeter of thicker plastic, and that's just enough for it to make it very difficult to get in and out. And I just basically put up a comparison. I put a spec sheet on all three. I talk about price, about the voltage, the amperage that they all can put out, some of my heat tests. And, you know, I basically leave it up to the person at the end. But I let people know that, you know, you can't get the Tesla adapter. That would be a very easy solution. If that was available and you could order it on Tesla's website and get it in a week, you know, I think it would be easy to lean towards that because it's the adapter that's proven now, but that's approved now. But you can't get it. And Tesla isn't putting it up for sale yet. I don't know when they're going to put it up for sale. We don't know how much they're going to charge for it. And we see that the Ford and Rivian and GM hopefully soon is going to be shipping these. They're telling their customers, some of my followers are telling me, I just got the email back from Ford, like, expect your delivery in October. So, you know, people don't want to wait. And that's when you have to go for the third party. And both of these worked fine for me. The A to Z seems to be probably the most solid choice right now. Once Electron gets their manufacturing really completely ironed out, I would put that on the same level as the A to Z. It's really I know they've had problems with these tolerances, with it either coming loose or pulling out, but get a hold of one and feel it. It's a very well-made connector. And, you know, once their contract manufacturing gets ironed out, which I'm sure it will, I feel comfortable recommending it. I have discount codes for both of them. The 10% A to Z discount. If anybody wants to order one, when you go to order it, put in state of charge with no spaces. You get 10% off. And if you get the Electron, but Electron is only putting out this for 1 week now. It's 15% off the Electron one. The A to Z adapter, I have a standing discount for A to Z, and I'm going to have it for their full product line soon of 10%. But, you know, if you want to grab one, you're thinking about getting one of these too. You got a week to save 15% on the Electron, and the A to Z will be 10%, which will continue. But I feel comfortable telling people they can use either one. Even though Electron's had the manufacturing problems, there's nothing wrong with the innards. There's no issues with them, like, you know, overheating or melting or anything like that. I've gotten engineering reports on these, the testing reports, continued use. A to Z sent me a whole ton of of data and charts on their internal testing, their engineering testing on how they're running it at like the full amperage for like 48 hours straight, and it still doesn't overheat and it's still, the connections are fine. So I think both of these adapters are going to get UL certification before the end of this year. That's what I believe. It's just my speculation, but talking to engineers and the CEOs of both companies, they're both very confident that they'll be UL certified. And I think once that happens, the OEMs are going to say, if it's UL certified, it's approved to use on our network. I don't know why they wouldn't. I don't know why any company would say, well, I know it's UL certified, but it's not Ford certified.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good shout. So that state of charge code even works in the UK. I didn't know that I could, the A to Z EVshop.com just defaults to pounds. Obviously it knows my IP address. Mm-hmm. And even on that, the state of charge discount code takes my 10%, £15.80 off of that. So that's pretty handy as well. Not that I need one or can use one over here, but it even works if I could. So there you go.
Keep going, Martin.
Yeah, just pop it in there and get some money off. That's cool. State of charge.
Thank you. And A to Z has really taken advantage of Lectron's manufacturing issues in the recall now.
Well,
they got a surge of orders. I was talking to them last week and they were like, you know, we don't wish competitors ill will, you know, like we don't want anybody to have a problem because it's going to hurt the whole industry. If any one company has some type of serious problem, people are going to say, don't use these third party adapters. So honestly, A to Z wasn't relishing in the fact that Lectron had this recall and everything. They were like, I hope they get this straightened out so it doesn't harm the whole industry. But with that said, you know, our orders doubled the last 2 weeks, you know, so. It's, you know, a lot of people want access and they just don't want to wait.
Yeah.
And I think they figure, listen, let's say you use my code, you buy the A to Z, which is $197, you get $19 off, you know, you're down to, you know, $170 something. And then Ford ships you your adapter in the fall or whatever, right? You put your, if you don't want to keep two, most people will keep two. But if you don't want to keep two, if you put that thing online somewhere, you probably get $100 for it. So what are you losing? You know, $60-$70 in the interim, and in that time you'll have the opportunity to you know, use it now.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I really should find the name of the person that said this, but obviously there was the GM call this week, and it wasn't Mary Barra, but someone was asked about when GM will get supercharger access, and they said 2024, and then I think afterwards their comms team or PR to whatever, I should find the person that gave the quote and the outlet that they gave it to came back and said no, that we didn't mean 2024, we mean spring 2024, our plans haven't changed.
Right.
To which the outlet said, spring's officially over now. And so, but when they said, well, it'll be in 2024, of course, they leapt on that to go, oh, hang on a minute, you've given yourself a runway of another 8 months time. And they really backtracked on that. But I don't know the name of the person from GM.
But officially, spring is the 21st of this month. So we're still in spring.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's only because I got the equinox. We're still waiting for that.
Well, ignore me then. So they've still got time.
I mean, yeah. I mean the lunar, celestial equinox, not the car. Tom, don't get it too excited.
But what an argument to make. Like, you know, come on, it's, you know, sorry we're late with the adapter, but the, you know, we've all gone to Stonehenge and held hands and it's not summer yet. So, come on.
Well, undoubtedly, the whole Tesla supercharger firing team thing has delayed it. It has undoubtedly delayed GM and the other companies. But the good news is what I'm hearing is that it's very soon that's going to happen.
So, yeah, I think it's the next couple of weeks. We'll I think it's going to
happen. And you can order. GM is charging $25, I think, plus ship, $25 plus tax for the adapter. Rivian and Ford are shipping it to their customers for free.
Right.
With GM, you've got to go to your dealership. I don't think you can order it online like you could with the other two. You go to your dealer. You have to have your VIN of your vehicle because you need a vehicle. You can't just buy one. And then it's $25, I think, plus tax.
Right. All right. So one last news story I wanted to hit before we got out of here. So Volvo EX90 production has started in Charleston, South Carolina. South Carolina. So yeah, there's but and that's pretty interesting. I'm not really sure what we think about the EX90. Has anyone driven the EX90 yet, Tom?
No, not me.
No, I don't know
of anybody.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting on that one. It's a bit of an odd vehicle. It's an expensive SUV, and there's a bunch of those out there now, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how it can compete on price. But being made here, at least the versions of it that are under $80,000, because several of them are over, the ones that are under $80,000 should be eligible for the $7,500 tax credit. So that should help a little bit. But I think the bigger news around this, the EX90, at least for some of us in the industry, that's just kind of interesting, is it's going to have the battery passport. So battery passports will be mandatory for electric vehicles sold in the EU, the European Union, from February of 2027, and that's going to show the complete composition of batteries, basically including the origin of key materials, their carbon footprint, and recycled content. So it's a really good look at what's going into your battery pack. And that's kind of important because, all the NMC batteries, the C in NMC stands for cobalt. And, there are, legitimate concerns about the supply of cobalt. There's a lot of the conditions comes from mostly the Democratic Republic of Congo. And there's some child labor happening over there and some mines or some... it's kind of loosey-goosey. It's kind of I'm not really sure how you describe the situation over there, but it's not manufacturers need to take extra pains to make sure that the cobalt that they get from the DRC is not being mined by children, and I think they've done that. There are programs, certification programs in place to kind of help them deal with that, but this passport is part of that whole situation, that people will have a more peace of mind that the materials in their batteries are mined by adults, for one, right? And and there's also, right, where they come from, the carbon footprint of mining and processing those materials as well is important, right? So this is a little too... It's come a couple of years early. This is like the first one doing this, the EX90, and it's in partnership with a UK startup called Circular that uses blockchain technology to map supply chains for companies. And yeah, and that, so that vehicle's the first to have that, and it's going into production now in South Carolina, and that's all I have to say about that, if anyone has anything else.
Well, look, I'm not surprised Volvo were early. They were the first ones over here to declare themselves an all-electric future when many, this was, I don't know the year, I forget when Volvo said we're going to go all-electric. Certainly nobody else was saying it at the time, and it was a bold statement. They went early. In many ways, they provided that that cover for other car manufacturers to come out and say something similar. So I'm not surprised they are ahead. They talk, Volvo talk a lot about it, so does Geely, and Polestar talk a lot about this. And I've said it many times in this podcast before, that one of the fascinating things, I find it fascinating, I'm not sure it really permeates down to many people, but one of the most fascinating things is that over the last 100 years, the cars that we love to buy and drive, the car makers that make them, had essentially become incredible machines themselves, incredibly good at buying parts from, tier one, tier two suppliers, arriving at the factory just in time, to the hour, to the minute. And they just became very good assemblers, designers, and marketers, and not really producers, which is where Tesla took a lead. All of the chemicals that were turning up, materials turning up at Giga Nevada on the back of trucks 10 years ago. That never gets talked about. But this is why Tesla has such a deep, deep knowledge of doing the battery stuff themselves, because they genuinely have been doing it all that time. And so what's so interesting about this, I find anyway, is that car makers are having to entirely change what they're good at, which was being very efficient assemblers and marketers and designers and selling the dream of the motor car, to going literally right back to the mine. I always say, right back to the mine. I use that as a shorthand on my podcast to illustrate how they've had to employ new people, learn new skills. And but they genuinely do have to go right back to the physical mine to know where it came from. And I think that is increasingly going to be something that obviously will affect materials used in lower end goods, devices, handheld devices, things like that, where you're not quite sure what even what country made that phone or that tablet, let alone where the battery inside it is from. But certainly with the car, big purchases like this, people will want to know the provenance of those materials. And so I'm not surprised Volvo have gone early and are exceeding that time scale on this. I think more people will be interested. Certainly, if you're selling into fleets and you're selling into anything that is involving kind of fleet buyers, they will have a bunch of sustainability targets that you're going to have to meet anyway as a car maker, so, or a vehicle maker, truck maker. So it makes total sense.
This is footage from the factory.
EX90 in production. It's dead exciting.
Wow. I haven't really seen that much of this car, actually, you know?
It's late, but that's fine. No one was really clamoring for it, but when it arrives, it'll have a buyer.
Okay. Was that Tom? Well,
the XC90s are great vehicles. I've driven plenty of them. I mean, wonderful vehicles. So hopefully the electric version is even better.
Yeah.
So I have one little other news piece that I wanted to mention. And I think we have time for real quick.
Go for it.
Yeah.
So NIO, which is the eighth biggest EV maker in China right now by sales, has gotten permission. They have got the regulatory nod, they say, for a third factory in China. And that's kind of a big deal. For a while, NIO couldn't get permission to build its own factory. It had to contract out capacity from an existing automaker. And that kind of really held them back for a while. So this is, but now they've got their own factory, even though they got a second one. And it's really blossoming as a country, as a company. It's really helping them out there. And now they're about to launch a third one. And this third one is for a new affordable car brand. NIO is a luxury or a premium brand. And a lot of car manufacturers in China, they're sprouting brands like branches, basically. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon over there. But so NIO has its own affordable car brand that's launching now. It's called Onvo, O-N-V-O. And so that's what this new plant is supposed to produce, 600,000 unit annual capacity. That would boost the total approved production capacity to 1 million cars, which is almost on par with Tesla's massive Shanghai plant. So I just thought that was kind of a neat, I know it's a Chinese market. It doesn't affect us too much here in the U.S. yet, but I think all these things will, and I think it's important to keep an eye on what at least the major players in China are doing. And, it may only be the eighth largest Chinese manufacturer, but I feel like it's got a bigger presence outside of China. You know, it's one of the brands that we talk about, like with BYD and NIO, basically Xpeng. What am I missing in the third one? I think Leap Motor is going to become bigger now with Stellantis' involvement in that brand. But yeah. All right.
Yeah. Well, NIO certainly has brand recognition more than most of the Chinese brands. You know, people have been hearing about that for a while. So, and they make really high quality vehicles. I've driven them in China, and this was a few years ago, and they were high quality back then, and they're just getting better. So the Chinese automobile industry is about to really explode, and we've talked about that before.
We need to get you over there sometime again soon.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to go a month or two ago, and I just couldn't fit it in. Maybe in the fall I might do a Beijing to Shanghai drive, which is long. It's like from New Jersey to Florida, I think, wanted to compare the length and just kind of see if I could figure out charging and all that stuff. But I have to plan that for the fall. One other thing I wanted to point out really before we go, I know we have to go. I know I've talked to you guys about my possibility getting a Tesla Cybertruck. And I had the opportunity to get one in the very beginning, but it wasn't my reservation. A friend of mine reserved one like the minute it became available. He didn't want it. He asked me if I wanted it. But then I told you guys, I always had my own reservation, but I didn't reserve it until about 3 months after you could reserve it. So I figured I was way deep down the queue. I mean, when I reserved it, I think it was in January or February of, I guess, 2020. When did they reveal it? In 2019 or 2018? I forget. It was in November. I know that because I was in China when Musk had the what was on stage and everything. I was in China with NIO actually then. But I know it was in November. And I reserved mine in either January or February, so like 2 or 3 months later. And at that point, I think Tesla already announced they had 1 million reservations or something like that, crazy number. So I figured right. I'm way down in the queue. Last week, I got my email. Your reservation is up. Time to configure your Cybertruck. So that goes to show you how many people have passed.
Right.
If I can order now, and I was more than 1 million deep when I made my reservation, I don't know how many Cybertrucks Tesla has sold yet, but I mean, it can't be more than 10,000, right? I mean, it's got to be just a couple thousand that they've put on the road at this point. Somewhere in that range, let's say, and they're already, they're already offering me to reserve it. Now, I'd imagine a lot of people drop their reservation, not necessarily because they don't like the Cybertruck, but I think it's because of the pricing eventually, supposedly you'll be able to get it at a lower cost. But like, for instance, when I reserved mine, I wanted the dual motor. I think it was $69,900. I think they were saying what it's going to start at. Mm-hmm. So now if I get one, it's got to be $100,000 foundation series.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people, it's not fair to say all these people decided they don't like the Cybertruck anymore, because that some of them did, I'm sure, because not everything that was promised was delivered. But I'd imagine a lot of people said, you know, I came in for a $70,000 truck and I was stretching my budget at that point. Now it's $100,000. I don't, you know, I'm passing. But my question is, I don't know this, maybe some people know, I can't punt my reservation down the road for that lower one to be available. I guess if I, at this point, say, no, I don't want this, that's it. I lost my place in line, and now I can't get the lower priced one, when it's available, if I wanted one. As I said in my video, I'm still very happy with my Lightning as a daily driver. The only reason I'm even considering it is for content. Because it's content right. gold, and the fact that this is my business, the depreciate I can accelerate depreciation on it, and I end up not losing a lot of money. If I buy it for $100,000, sell it for $60,000, 2 years later, with the tax savings and everything, I haven't lost a lot of money, and I've made money making videos and stuff. So it's the only reason why I'm considering it. I'm very happy with my Lightning, but now I have to decide. And I even said in my comparison video, if you remember at the end, I said my reservation probably won't be up till the end of this year or maybe the spring of next year. That's what I was expecting to get called, not this soon. Mm-hmm. And so now I've got to figure out what I'm going to do. I'm probably going to pass, but I'm still figuring out how this will work with depreciation and everything, if it's worth me picking it up.
Man, I've got to say, if I had the choice right now, I'd definitely be Team Rivian. I think, before, Cybertruck never really appealed to me that much anyway, but just, it feels like it just didn't really, failed to launch really in spectacular fashion like we kind of thought it might,
Yeah. And a lot of people are posting this. It's the content's already saturated. There's a lot of videos. Mm-hmm. It is. But also, don't forget, I'll have and I have my own segment of followers and so forth. And I provide different content. Everybody has their own unique content. And I would be living with the Rivian R1S, the Lightning, and the Cybertruck. I can make some really good comparison videos with all three, range tests, charging comparisons, functionality, things like that. So there's plenty of stuff I could put out. I think that would be interesting enough, even though it's saturated.
Yeah. And how do you pronounce that? Rabzi mentions a new Ram truck EV this year, right?
Yeah.
So that's another one to keep your eye out for. That's that could be content gold for good and or bad reasons, because we have no idea how that's going to be, because Stellantis doesn't have a... It hasn't built a whole lot of EVs over. Well, they have their European brands, which have 50 kilowatt hour front wheel drive EVs. That's au bout, as we say in Quebec. There's all kinds of them, but yeah, not the full size EV. So we're kind of curious how that's going to really work out. How they're going to do, in their manufacture of those. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Anything else? So. Any big news stories that I missed this week? I feel like it was like a really slow kind of news week, except for the Rivian news, really. Okay.
I think that's about it.
Not that I
think, so I think that brings us to the end of our show. So if you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, and thank you all again for joining us, and we'll see you again next time. Ciao.
Bye now.